To help support this podcast
and get exclusive bonus content and rewards,
make a monthly pledge at
patreon.com/universebox.
And remember to think outside.
Is this really necessary? You're lucky you're not locked in Granny's freezer. Take it off. Or I tell Arthur he just welcomed the Dark One into you. What's that, sis? I can't hear you. No one here knows who we are, and it's going to stay that way. So you can either behave and pretend to be my mute handmaiden, or go back to Granny's. We can rely on Doc for prenatal care.
Greetings from Storybrooke. I'm Bill Meeks.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeSimone.
And this is Grumpy's Wingman. And we also talk about ABC's hit series, Once Upon a Time. How you doing, Anne-Marie?
I'm tired. How are you?
I'm pretty tired myself. I'm pretty tired myself, but we're back
here. Okay. It's going to be awesome tonight.
8:30 p.m. EST, Monday night at live.universebox.com. And now, actually, on Alpha Geek Radio.
Alpha Geek Radio.
So if you can't tune in live on Monday night, it's 8:30 p.m. EST at live.universebox.com with our chatters like Other Anne-Marie, Hope. Who else is in there?
There's a whole party. Let's see. There's Angel, Bobby, Hope, May, Other Anne-Marie, and Sageverse.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be some more people popping in there shortly. But if you can't make it to the YouTube event, you can check us out now on live audio stream at alphageekradio.com. For now, we're on the special events channel.
Yes.
For Greetings from Storybrooke, but hopefully we might graduate to the main channel soon. Our other show, Universe Box, is already there.
Universe Box is the big guy.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is a prime time for podcasting, I guess.
Yeah.
So
it's a prime time for TV. It's a prime time for podcasting.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But if you guys need to find out how to tune in there, just go to tunein.alphageekradio.com and you can get it on your iPhone, your Roku.
I still think that's so cool that you're
Apple Radio.
Apple Radio?
Yeah, all sorts of stuff.
Dude, we are so cool now.
I know. We're all over the place.
I seriously didn't know most of it.
If anyone's tuning in from Alpha Geek Radio,
let us know.
Definitely.
Tell us how it is.
Pleased to have you along with us for our Once Upon a Time podcast.
Woohoo!
Okay, Anne-Marie, I guess we might as well go ahead and get started with our episode discussion here. Why don't you go ahead and hit us up with the rhyming episode summary?
The curse has been cast. The Dark One is free. Merlin and Dopey are both stuck as trees. Back at King Arthur's, he's throwing a ball. Percival spying and prepping a brawl. Henry has romance while Hook loses his. Bad can be sexy, but Emma's got frizz. Despite all the haters, Regina is nice. But what is she willing to pay on the price?
The price!
The price!
The price!
Is right.
The price! Ha-ha!
All magic comes with the price, dude.
All magic does come with the price. What do you give this episode's price, Anne-Marie? Or rather, your rating for
my rating? I was like, wait a minute, we're rating things already.
Yes, we are. Just a general impression. What'd you think about it?
I want to be like, yeah, but I feel a lot more like meh.
Meh?
I'm the only one, and they're going to like start throwing things at me. Their swords are going to come through the chat room, but
I know. I was going to say, like, I didn't catch that impression hardly anywhere.
No, it's just me. I am just the queen of meh.
You're the odd gal out this week, I
par
guess.
For the course. Par for the course.
As for me, I liked it.
Oh, I guess I should ask you.
Yeah.
Sorry. So you liked
it. No, it's totally
fine.
You
liked it so much you tweeted it at Adam last night.
Yes, I did. I was like, I loved it. I can't wait to talk about it. No, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really solid. One thing about this season of Once is I have no idea where it's going. And that really excites me because there were points last season I didn't know where it was going, but a lot of times I really didn't care all that much either until the author came in and stuff. Yeah. But this season, I'm really engaged with it, really speculating on characters and everything. But, we'll go ahead and get right into the main discussion here.
Totally.
Okay, so first of all, they do a little bit more about the kind of Dark One mythology, not just the mythology, but just kind of like the logic behind the Dark One, too. First of all, we find out that, all magic comes with a price, dearie.
See, that wasn't just a rumply thing.
Yeah, it wasn't Rumple being poetic. It was literally there's a price to be paid for magic, a literal price, and it's not just karma or anything like that. It's like there's a price collector in the form of a fury flying around, you know. So I do think it was very interesting that it was meant literally, and I also thought that, you know, considering that, it also makes a lot of sense that Rumple in his story Brooke persona he loves making deals as the Dark One, and then he's a pawnbroker in Storybrooke.
Does he necessarily love making deals? Let me finish my sentence.
Well, let me finish mine.
I had a point within your point. I didn't want to wait. I'd forget. Okay, fine. I'll forget it.
Okay, no, but it's interesting because he wants to make someone else responsible for paying the price and then skim off the top, just like a pawnbroker. You know, he would make these favors with people, so he would have other people do the bad thing that, you know, comes with the price, so he didn't have to pay the price and he got the profit from it, you know, just like a pawnbroker. Mm-hmm. But go ahead. Sorry. It's not that I'm being rude. It's just that I'm so tired that I don't want to lose concentration or I'll never.
And that's why I wanted to do it too. No, I was going to say, you say that, it, you know, that he likes making deals. Does he necessarily? He's kind of been at it for 300 and some years. It may have been fun in the beginning, but I feel like, I don't know. It doesn't seem. That was my only. It's stupid now that we've gone through all this. Continue.
Well, I don't know. He's still making deals in Storybrooke.
Like, now he's laid up in the back room.
Yeah, yeah. He's making deals in his own mind palace.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, he made deals with Emma when she came to town. Yeah. It's something I recall. But more about, like, the Dark One revelations in this episode. It's very obvious that the Dark One is very upset because his human host keep being held back from their true dark potential by their loved ones, you know. And I really like it because it explains why Rumple's desire to separate himself from the dagger and to, you know, gain more and more power was ultimately more important than Bell or Neil or anyone else. Because, I mean, you know, Bell says in this episode that her kiss kind of broke through and got to the man beneath the Dark One. But ultimately, the Dark One...
it's going to win.
Yeah, yeah, he was too powerful, and he was probably in some other form, I'd imagine, but kind of whispering in Rumple's ear, no, you got to do this. You got to separate yourself from this dagger because it's holding you back.
You know, perhaps from that chair in the corner where he just would turn and dot. Oh, wait, no, that's Emma.
Yeah, that's the crazy, crazy
that's
Emma.
That's the crazy lady.
Who Merida was spooked by.
I'm spooked by her.
You know, and one other thing I just wanted to say is that, you know, King Arthur in the flashback this week says that we're well aware of the demon. Now, I know that the Dark One entity comes from Merlin and everything, but I wonder if he ever ran into Rumple, you know, throughout the course of all their adventures and travels and everything. Like, because I mean, I think that would be an interesting thing, like if Rumple had popped into Camelot for some period of time.
Oh.
But then again,
well, I mean, they knew of the Dark One, but there's other things going on there.
Yeah, and there's other Dark Ones too. And there's also some timeline stuff that we'll get into later that might preclude that.
The whole world's timey-wimey.
Okay. Anything good coming up from over here in the chat room?
I don't know. All I know is Bobby's on Team Anne Marie with feeling like this was very meh.
Uh-huh.
Hope said maybe Neil paid Rumple's price for everything. Rumple is the bell of the season. Ha!
Yeah, just laid up in the shop. Yeah, that truer words never spoken. Oh, also, I just wanted to point out that they didn't use the official name for Cruella Maleficent.
No, they didn't.
They called them the Trio of Terror, not the Spice Girls of Evil.
And you know what? That's where they went wrong. But I enjoyed that entire discussion where he's like, you know, we can deal with this. We can deal with Pan. We can deal with the Snow Queen. We can't deal with this. Done.
Yeah, the person who was ultimately responsible for defeating all those villains is now the villain, so bye.
Yeah.
Until Dopey becomes a tree.
Oh.
Dope tree.
I didn't.
He doesn't have any less lines in the show than he did before.
Nope.
So that's good.
Nope. Okay. So.
Oh, and Bobby also thinks that we won't see full Dark Swan until we see her in Camelot flashbacks. We got a little bit of her on
skin.
Her hand. Yeah.
Yeah, the skin.
That skin condition, that Dark One skin condition.
Glitter. It's called glitter. I'm transforming to the Dark One. No. Okay. Slightly off topic. Not really. I do not understand why they lied to King Arthur from the beginning.
Oh, about the savior thing?
About all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, is there something that says that the Dark One and the savior cannot be the same person? Probably not. And if so, they don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Only Blue does, and who knows where she's at. Like, I mean, I get that it's a little scary. You don't want to tell this guy, like, hey, we're bringing the Dark One into Camelot. You know something.
Oh, no, I just thought of something. Go ahead and finish your point.
Okay, just keep touching your finger. You'll remember. but, like, they had the dagger to control her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she couldn't have gone too crazy, hopefully.
Yeah.
But it would have made their reason for wanting to find and save Merlin so much stronger if they go, look, we have this person. She sacrificed herself for this person. Here are these people.
We have to save the Dark One from herself.
Yes! That would have been nice. And also, we probably wouldn't have had that big sword fight at the ball. We wouldn't we wouldn't have the Fury and the Grim Reaper in a boat. And
was it just me, or was Regina kind of like rubbing it in to Emma that she was the savior now a little bit? Just a little. Just
a little bit. But I mean, you know, you're the savior, but you're not.
Okay, so what I was thinking, and I a couple of my theories this week have to do with a character from King Arthur, Morgana Le Fay, Merlin's kind of rival wizard. What if Blue is Morgana, or has she been cast? I don't know if Morgana's been cast.
I don't know much about that,
so
I can't really speak to it.
That's fair.
I know the name. I'm sure I've read at least one story.
Mm-hmm.
Probably been 20 years.
Yeah, but back to your point, though, like Arthur was also very forgiving when he found out that Regina was
Camelot is a land of second chances.
Don't worry about it, Regina. It's all good.
He knew. I think he knew.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of pulls into one of my other things, which kind of makes sense.
Oh, yeah, you can go ahead and talk about it.
I know, I'm going to. Oh, maybe I didn't put it there. Doop, doop, doop. Okay, I'm just going to say it. So who enchanted the stuff for Percival?
Mm-hmm.
So see, it's sort of jumping yours, but relevant to yours. It all does this.
Yeah, definitely.
We didn't see any magical Camelot people, man. Come on. like who was doing that? But maybe because Arthur was so forgiving, maybe he already knew because of, well, the amulet. Let's just be honest. It's Sophia the First up in here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what it sort of, maybe he was the one who did that. Maybe he was able to see all that too.
That could be.
I don't know. Maybe he has an in with a wizard.
You know, I did just check and they haven't cast a Morgana Le Fay yet. I know they're talking in the chat room a little bit saying, no, she should be her own person, this, that, and the other. But at the same time, Blue has been Shady Blue for so long that it feels like that would be a really good character for her to actually be.
Yes.
And I would really kind of like to see the story of how Morgana Le Fay became the Blue Fairy, too. That would be a lot of fun. And why she's been running schemes for so long. But you know who else is running schemes?
Yes.
Who I think has been running schemes.
I agree with you, too.
I think that Arthur and Guinevere are responsible for this new curse, for all of the badness that has gone on.
I bet you. Oh.
What?
I bet somehow, whatever this magic-y thing is, they're responsible for Merlin actually being in the tree.
I wouldn't be surprised, and I would actually guess
I didn't actually read yours, so I don't know if that's
yeah, but it. I would actually guess that it was maybe Guinevere is more involved than Arthur, maybe even. Because, you know, it's obvious that they need Excalibur reunited with the Dark One dagger, because if his people find out that he doesn't have
the whole sword.
The whole Excalibur, he's out of a job, you know, and you know, his whole kingdom crumbles. So it's obvious that's a big motivation for him, and that's why he's been waiting for this prophecy to come true so he could reunite them, you know.
But where are the prophecies?
In Merlin's head. He told them.
But
to Arthur.
But is that necessarily said?
Yeah, he says that Merlin told us that you would come here to there.
But there's so many in different forms of everything. A prophecy is delivered in a different fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if he wrote down, you know, he had these visions and he wrote them down. Or if there's the globe thingies like in Harry Potter where somebody witnesses.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's just that Merlin is like, hey, this is the deal.
He was like, this is going to happen in 15 years. Show up on this day.
But I'm not
going
to tell you how.
Right.
You know, so I think that Arthur and Guinevere had some hand in casting this curse and getting Emma to the point where she could reunite the two weapons. But alternatively, maybe Arthur and all the people from Camelot got pulled over into our world, so Excalibur would be as well. Maybe they had to pull over everybody in order to get maybe whoever did it. You know.
See, now I like your whole thing that they cast the curse.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't this point, right? But I kind of think it was Emma, though, because it's in the Dark One cave.
Yeah, but I don't know, though, because I mean...
They're not going to pull it over in a curse and it not appear where they can get to it.
But remember, Rumple couldn't cast the curse on his own because he had no loved one to sacrifice. So Emma obviously didn't sacrifice. No, but even when they cast the curse to bring them back to bring them back with Oz and all that, you know, they had to sacrifice half of Charming's heart, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Oh, his whole heart.
So,
Emma
had nobody over there who she could sacrifice. No loved one she could sacrifice. I mean, maybe she could have sacrificed her own, but that would have been weird. So, I mean, if someone else cast the curse. Maybe they had to bring Arthur and all those other folks over to get Excalibur into town. And plus, you know, Emma's house really reminded me a lot of like a modern American take on the castle in Camelot or something, you know. It seemed like that same kind of style. I mean, it's a stretch to say a castle looks like a house, but if a castle can look like a house, that house looked a bit like a castle. You know what I mean? And how did Regina know where it was? I guess the bug parked outside.
Okay, so if Emma didn't cast the curse, how come she hits her memories still?
Because I think Gold had his memories through the curse.
No.
Yeah, he did. No.
They started coming back to him, but he didn't have them immediately. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a right away thing.
No, I think it was. I think we rediscovered that in our commentary rewatches. But one thing, it's obvious that King Arthur and particularly Guinevere are up to something. And if I had to guess right now, I'd say that it's probably Guinevere more than King Arthur, because King Arthur seems reluctant to lie, but at the same time, he doesn't want to disappoint his people. Where I think Guinevere just seemed kind of shady, and plus, if you know the whole story of King Arthur, you know she was sleeping with Lancelot and everything, or in love with Lancelot. And you know, running games on King Arthur anyway. So I wouldn't be surprised if she wasn't revealed as
the bad of the season.
A big bad, or at least someone, you know, partially responsible. And I kind of got the impression in that reuniting scene in the field with the tents and everything.
They both knew what was up.
Or at least that Guinevere did.
Yeah.
Like, King Arthur seemed genuinely happy to see her. She was like, oh, hey, Arthur. You know, but so I think Guinevere's up to something.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay, Elsie says in the chat room, Gold didn't have his memories until Emma came to town.
Ha!
But you know, Storybrooke technically probably has a savior now with Regina, so that doesn't disprove my point.
Yes, it does. You said he had them all along, and I said no, and you said you're wrong. And now Elsie has proved me correct.
No, I was saying that he had them in season one during the curse, before the curse was broken. No. That's all I was saying.
Oh, okay. Well, you didn't actually say that. So up here you said it, out here you didn't. Okay, anyway. So we were all concerned about Robin getting stabbed by Percival. I get that. Mm-hmm. But Charming...
Percy.
Don't do that when I'm talking. But Percy, no. But Charming leapt across a ballroom and killed Percival in 2 seconds flat. And no one mentions that Charming just killed a man.
Well, we were also very concerned about Emma killing Cruella in self-defense last season. But when Charming does it, it's fine.
Exactly.
Old school rules.
Men can do it and women can't. That's the old school rules. The king can do it, but his daughter can't. Okay, we already talked about that. Oh, okay, because we talked about the powers with the sword and the necklace thing. But another thing, Emma is standing there in front of everyone talking to a chair, and they take her word for it that she's okay?
Yeah.
I just start turning to this lamp over here and talking to it and completely ignoring anything else that's going on, no, I'm fine, be quiet. And I'm talking to this lamp. No.
Are you okay, Emery?
I'm wonderful, thank you.
Okay, well, that's fine then. Let's go about our business. Hey, here's some more magical powers. Have at it.
Power!
I know, but yeah, Emma's pretty... I did appreciate, though, that after she felt kind of the draw of that power from healing Robin Hood, that she immediately was like, hold on, let me try True Love's Kiss because this is too good. Like,
is that what it was?
Yeah, that's the impression that I got, was that she felt the Dark One powers kind of overtaking her, and she was like, well, let me try and kiss my true love again to see if that'll help get me my fix, you know what I mean?
And I interpreted it differently. I interpreted that the power, or the using the powers...
Made her a little randy?
A little bit, yeah.
There might have been an element of that, too.
So there's that. I was like, she's not doing that. She's, you know, doing that.
Yeah, she's a little crazy, though. Anything cool coming from the chat room here?
I don't even know. There's so many people going on. Talk to the lamp, Amory.
See, I do know that, yes, Emma did say that she cast the curse, but she also said in the diner that everyone in the diner was responsible for her turning completely dark. And then immediately this episode, she's like, no, Henry, it wasn't you.
No, not
anyone
you.
But you.
Right.
Honestly, and I might bring this up a little bit later, but I really think that Emma's running games on people. But we'll get
there
to that.
All running games.
Everybody's running games on everybody.
See,
else.
See, I can't even
sure.
just go shady, shady blue. It's just shady, shady everybody.
Shady, shady everybody. Shady. Well, why don't we talk about shady, shady us for a minute and tell people how they can support shady, shady us. Amory, why don't you go ahead and tell them a little bit about the Patreon?
Hi, we have this thing. It's called a Patreon over at patreon.com/universebox where you can make a monthly donation towards supporting our 3-weekly full audio, video, multiple streaming craziness podcast. We do A, Greetings from Storybrooke, B, Legends of Gotham about Fox's Gotham. We'll be going tomorrow, 8:30 p.m. right here. Mm-hmm. And we have also have Universe Box, which is stories set to a theme, which goes live Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. also at live.universebox.com. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Last week we talked about chocolate. I advise you go watch that episode.
We OD'd on chocolate.
Yep. I still can't eat sugar.
Yeah, I'm still like... shaking.
I had a brownie, a small brownie and a small cheesecake yesterday, and I still can't do it. But anyway, I digress.
Amy asks, if Emma casts the curse, does that make her mayor? Yes. Okay,
oh,
sorry, go ahead.
God.
That's why
Emma,
she has the nice
lights
house.
Are out.
That's why she has the nice house.
It's not a nice house. It was crappy on the inside.
Oh, it's a nice house. I like
she
it.
She needs a decorator. Bothered.
How did Regina know where it was? Go ahead.
She was magicked there. I don't know. Yeah. Monthly donations starting at 10 cents. We have all sorts of rewards, different levels. Mm-hmm. We'll sing you a song. We'll sing us a story.
Sing us a rhyme.
I don't know. I'm too tired.
Sing me something once upon a time.
That's for you, Amy. We'll write you a letter. We'll do a podcast with you. We're going to start sending out merch. So
yeah, we're going to be sending out some stickers this month to our October supporters that just all cleared through recently.
Woohoo! So if you'd like to make a contribution, make more of this crazy, crazy show, patreon.com/universebox. I was going universebox/Patreon.
Were you going?
Do it. Universe Boxio. That's not the one I was expecting.
Universe Boxio.
There we go.
Sing me a story.
Sing me a rhyme.
Sing all about what happened once upon a time. Sing a story.
I'm surprised those people haven't found us yet.
Yeah, I know.
We've never got
a copyright hit for that. I guess no one cares about copyright anymore. But thank you to our 32 patrons giving us $206 a month over at patreon.com/universebox. Remember to think outside and sing me a story sometime, please. Okay, so I guess we should get back into our main discussion here.
Sure.
Okay.
Do it.
So, I was mentioning, you know, sort of a timing issue. Arthur mentions that he received the prophecy from Merlin about a decade ago.
Yeah.
Which, as we saw in last week's episode, Merlin was in Minneapolis in 89. So okay. Sometime between 89 and, you know, modern day.
2005-ish?
Yeah, like within like a couple decades of being in Minneapolis when Emma
years.
Was a kid.
It's a 15-year thing.
Yeah, he made it back to Camelot to make this prophecy. So last week we were operating on the assumption that he was stranded on our world or something like that. Or at least I was. So obviously that's not the case. So I'm wondering why did he come to our world just to tell Emma that, and why did he go back to Camelot to make this prophecy, and who turned him into a tree?
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
all sorts of questions. Like,
oh, my other points. Like, there's like mm-hmm. 7 questions in a row because I don't get it.
Yeah, and it, plus the timing is so wonky because, you know, Sword in the Stone was a movie made in like 1977 or something, and if all this stuff happened like a decade ago, then, you know, did Merlin prophesy it to the author or something like that?
Camelot wasn't frozen, correct, during the first curse?
It doesn't appear so, no.
Well, I just don't remember because Lancelot was in that bubble.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, that's true. Lancelot was in that bubble. So I wonder...
He's gone now.
And Arthur doesn't seem like 50 years old either.
No.
So,
but time could also be different.
Yeah,
we don't know the time length.
Well, I think Adam has said that time runs concurrently.
Oh, okay.
I believe so. But I mean, again, it could be some sort of like frozen and a curse thing. Maybe they were trapped in that bubble too.
Interesting, in the bubble.
And maybe that's why he thinks it's a decade ago.
And it was really 30 years.
Yeah, exactly. We might have solved it. We might have cracked it.
Timelines.
You know, when they mentioned that Merlin was a tree and Dopey turned into a tree, and then we see that Fury in the Fury's part tree as well, it reminded me of something. I did a lot of research into Norse mythology for Infinite Tina, a book I have coming up out at the end of the year. And
fingers crossed.
One of the enemies is named, or one of the big concepts is a tree named Yggdrasil, I believe is the how it's pronounced. But basically, it's an immense tree that is central in Norse cosmology in connection to which nine worlds exist. So it's kind of like a Jefferson's hat for Norse mythology. And it's connected to heaven. The roots are in hell, you know. And then, you know, there's our world and some other miscellaneous worlds in between, you know, the top of the tree and the roots.
Bottom.
So I'm wondering if maybe that somehow all connects to the realms and everything else. And if, you know, we're working with this tree motif, like I thought that
apparently,
would be.
Apparently, yeah.
Yggdrasil, it's Yggdrasil. If you want to go look at the wiki page, it might help spur some theories for you. I'm going to be looking at it a little closer too, although I already have a little bit previous to this. But yeah, a lot of tree involvement and stuff. And I also wonder if maybe, like I was saying, maybe Morgana Le Fay is involved too.
Interesting.
You know, because she's got to show up somewhere in this mix, I think.
Okay.
But just
I don't really know her, so I can't really
just because
jump
if,
on that.
If Arthur's to be believed and the tree is Merlin, then Merlin's in a bad, bad way. And who else but his arch nemesis could put Merlin in such a bad, bad way?
Right.
You know what I mean? So just thoughts.
Sorry, the wheels keep turning.
Oh, and Hope also mentions with Norse mythology and everything, we also have Thor's hammer in the show, which is interesting. Which I actually, you know what, in a lot of ways, I really hope that that isn't the case because I've already written this section of Infinite Tina that uses this, and I based all the character archetypes, and I planned this out before we found out Camelot was going to be...
This is not the first time you've done that either.
I know, but before Camelot was going to be a thing, I basically took all the archetypes from the old Camelot legends and made them Vikings and then put them in space, more or less. So hopefully they don't go too far that route, because I might have to do a little rewrite before December.
No, you've got this. Okay, so Bell and Hook.
Bell and Hook. Book.
Are you shipping them?
I'm shipping everyone tonight.
Everyone's going to hate you if you ship Bell and Hook.
I have a list of 100 shipping names. Just wait. Go ahead. Book.
I want to hear them.
They're in the notes.
I'm sure they are.
We'll get there.
Okay, so... I kind of like how they're like have this weird relationship about like bouncing things off each other, going, oh, did you try this? Yeah, it's so hard to love the Dark One and so easy to hate them. And I don't know. It's really neat to see like there's a lot of those types of relationships. I'm actually going to combine one of my other points to this because it's very similar. Cutting and paste. with people who've had issues in the past, coming back around and having a good relationship, like Snow and Regina.
Yeah.
Where they had that awful, awful relationship. And it's really changed now. And it's really a little weird, though, because it's kind of like Snow is Regina's mom, too. Because how she's like, no, you're going to the hospital. Someone needs to check you. Like, stuff like that. I mean... But it's nice to see, you know, and she's the first one to step up anytime Regina's in trouble, except when it comes to taking the Dark One dagger. But, like, I don't know. There's lots of, like, good relationships
that
we don't usually – we haven't gotten to see as much.
I definitely enjoyed the kind of like ex Dark One lovers club kind of thing they had going on at Granny's there. Oh, and also Angel pasted this GIF saying "ship all the ships," I just put it up on screen because I loved it.
Oh no,
I loved it so much.
I can't see your screen.
Well, that's probably best. That's probably best. Okay, so yeah, but no, I thought it was interesting. I also thought it was interesting that they kind of had different takes on it too, like. Hook was trying to use True Love's Kiss to destroy the Dark One, where Belle was trying to use True Love's Kiss to save Rumpelstiltskin, like to draw him out of there.
Yeah.
Where Hook has already known that Emma's a good person, so he's not so concerned about like discovering the good person inside, but more destroying the evil thing on the outside.
Right, but he's trying to break the Dark One curse. And
yeah, but
he should know that True Love's Kiss isn't going to do that.
Yeah.
Exactly, because, Belle and Rumple.
Yeah.
Belle and
Rumple. I'm just saying that Hook's kiss is more destructive, where Belle's was more medicinal. You know what I mean?
Okay, so maybe that's why it's not working.
Yeah, it could be. Could be.
Could be.
Could be. Or maybe... Maybe again.
Oh, here we go. Shipping all the ships.
Well, I was going to say maybe Emma's running games and, maybe she doesn't. Well, she does say I don't need fixed. So maybe she actually really doesn't need fixed. Maybe she isn't even the Dark One anymore. Maybe she's doing this all with savior power. But then again, she still has evil Rumple in her head.
No,
so.
she's the Dark One.
Okay, so you bring up Belle and Hook, and I kind of saw, if Rumple doesn't make it through, I kind of saw a new bow in Belle's future. And we see it a little bit in the ball, and that's I'm going to call the ship Bumpy, which is Belle and Grumpy, because
I like Bumpy.
Bumpy. Bumpy. Book or Bumpy. Oh. The new shipping war for season 5. Weigh in the chat room. Book or Bumpy. But Grumpy and Belle already have a history together because, they knew each other back in Enchanted Mist Haven, Enchanted Forest days.
When she was allowed to go on adventures and not just look things up in books.
Yeah, they kept commiserating at that tavern where the dwarves would be hanging out, and Grumpy would always give her like a motivational speech. And we see the same thing happen again at the ball in Camelot.
Yep, we do.
Here. And I think they would make an interesting couple. Because, like I said, they have a history together. He's a big motivator for her, which is something that's very positive in a relationship. Plus, Lee Ehrenberg, who plays Grumpy, is a much more prominent character this season already. And
my name is Grumpy. I speak for the audience.
Exactly. I speak for the trees, particularly Dopey.
Now he really does speak for the trees. See, that wasn't relevant when I made the joke earlier.
But I think they could be a good ship. If Rumple doesn't make it, I hope Rumple makes it because I love Rumple.
He has to make it. Okay, are we on to mine?
Yeah, we can go ahead and go to your. Wait, did we get much Bumpy or Book?
No, not really.
We got a Bumpy
friendship. We got a Book Bumpy since Dreamy Leroy's go to say hi.
Book or Bumpy?
Uh-oh, Amy P. quit on us. she left when we started singing.
Okay, well, go ahead.
There's not much more. Okay, so isn't Blue supposed to be looking after Rumple and the Apprentice?
Yes.
Isn't somebody supposed to be trying to heal these extremely magical old men? Like, they're not young on their own.
Then again, the last time we saw her attending to them was 6 weeks ago. So who knows what happened to Blue in the last 6 weeks?
We don't even know where the Apprentice is. We didn't even get a peek at him. At least we saw Rumple laying on the cot.
Elsie says Hook plus Belle equals hell. I'll agree with that. Maybe, Belle could have dismissed her when she got back, too.
She could have, and she probably, they do whatever they can to keep her off the show, and that really irks me, because that's the character I want to know about. But, is anyone actually trying to heal Rumple? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, I feel like I'd have been a little more concerned if I was Belle, and it's the first day we've been gone, and we're in Camelot, and there's already, like, 5 rose petals not on the rose.
Yeah, or sometimes there's just a cloud in there, too.
Okay, I think I noticed that the cloud appears after the 6 weeks.
Oh, okay.
I think. I'd have to go back, but it seemed more you got Rose before and cloud
well,
after.
I almost want to say it was when they came out of Granny's, there was a cloud around it, too.
I didn't say I was right.
Yeah.
I just said I thought. And that's where we went wrong. I thought. Okay. Yeah, go. Stop.
No, but I did like that scene where Regina was like, Rumpel, you're the reason everyone hates me. It's not because I went evil. It's because of you. It's all because of you. And
well, the girl's
like, hi, Regina.
I know.
What
it's
are
like,
you
did
doing
she not know
here?
She was there?
Yeah. But then she like pops up and she's all helpful and everything
yes.
after like Regina was yelling
at her husband.
I hate you and everything
but
you've done to
fault.
Me.
Like,
but that brings up a good point, though, about this big theme this episode, the big overarching plot was kind of a lack of faith in Regina. Well, not in Camelot necessarily.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone not liking or not trusting that Regina is on the up and up, which, you know, we've been through several seasons now. We should know that Regina is on the side of the angels, but people are still doubting her in this episode.
Yeah, that was really annoying.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a string they've plucked a bunch, but I think they kind of hit the nail, I hit it again this episode, just to show that, yes, she has the full support of the main cast. They had to call it into question again, just to make it very obvious to the audience that, yes, okay, the whole town's behind her now, so she can completely lean into being Savior 2.0. And the town is there with her, just so no one would have any, you know, niggling little doubts as we move on in the season. At least that's the impression I got. I hope they don't do it a lot this season.
But if they do, okay, because here was my note. So tired of Regina feeling like she has something to prove. She's good now. She was basically the savior in season 4 finale. Mm-hmm. Move on.
Yeah. Like, especially in modern storybook, I don't want to see them revisit this again after this episode, no. After the whole, like,
they beat it over
the
head.
Away.
Yeah, like.
Like, I could see maybe it coming up again in Camelot in the flashbacks. And that would be okay, I think.
It's
because
a flashback,
that's a whole new group of characters to distrust Regina. But, I mean, if for the people in town to distrust her at this point, after everything she's done to save them, I think it's kind of silly.
A little bit silly.
So
Henry and Violet. A little bit silly.
I don't like it.
Hylet?
Venry. So she basically in Camelot doesn't even want to give him the time of day until she realizes he has this thing from the Savior. Like, she already knows that he is the son. Like, does it really matter that it's a gift? And, like, of course he plays it up, you know, typical. Being like, oh, this was more a token of thanks for saving the town when we were stuck in an alternate timeline. I'm like, really? Really we're doing that? But, like, she was really, like, mean girly. Like, she felt really, really mean girly. Like, she didn't care.
A little bit,
until
she heard that song that they went over and over with again.
Oh, it was awful.
That reminded me so much of a movie I really, really hate with Heath Ledger called Knight's Tale.
No, because I love
where
that.
Where it's like all like heavy metal music over in a medieval setting.
I love that movie.
Fair enough.
Heath Ledger. The obsession began. So, but it seemed weird because like in Camelot she was like that. But in Storybrooke, Henry automatically already seemed to have like a sort of an upper hand on their like mini relationship, and she was much more accepting of him, even before what?
Well, it seemed like both of them had kind of like an echo of memory of the stuff in Camelot.
I don't know if he did, but she obviously did. She's like, I feel like I've heard this before, and I think that she is either like a crack in the curse, and like she kept some of her memories, like somebody you know didn't shake the whatever enough. Or she's looped in with the Guinevere and Arthur thing.
Could be. Very well could. Maybe it's Morgana in disguise, too. That could be it.
There we go.
In May in the chat room asked, random question, what kind of iPod did Henry have? Like a 2005 iPad.
It was a Nano.
Was it a Nano?
Yeah, other Amory's like, iPod Nano. I'm pretty sure it was a Nano, because it wasn't big.
Bobby's on Team Bill Meeks about A Knight's Tale.
I did think it was
interesting, though, that Regina has a thing for apples, and then Henry had a thing with apples, with an Apple product.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, it's going to
happen. That was kind of silly.
Yeah.
But, and Elsie's asking, who is Violet in Camelot? Is she Arthur's daughter?
I don't think she is Arthur's daughter, though she really does almost look like a cross between, like, she looks like she could be related to Guinevere. So maybe she's, like, her niece.
Mm-hmm.
That would work, because she was standing with, like, two other adults.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like everyone in Camelot would go to a ball like this every night.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, another dance, another dress.
Oh yeah.
Like,
well she had to have at least some sort of status to get into the party, right? You know.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Grumpy was there.
Yeah. But he was with the Savior's party. He got in because he was with the cool group. He was with the cool kids.
Where was Granny?
He was with
Zelina.
He was with Judd Nelson going into the Viper Room in the 80s. Anyone could get in with him, you know. So like,
where was Selena? I don't know what's going
Selena,
on.
Selena, she was the mute servant,
yeah.
So she wasn't allowed in the ball.
It's true, I guess. She disappeared. Granny disappeared. Doc decided.
That was a
to
convenient
babysit.
Way for Bex Mader to go on a little vacay.
Yeah, she's
during
like,
the filming
I'm going
of the episode.
Okay, sorry. Go.
Okay, so let's see here. Yeah, okay, so Emma says in the scene at the pier with Henry and Regina after she gets Beetlejuice there and everything, she says there's
the
a... Beetlejuice. Emma Swan. She's here.
Hold
she's
on,
in the
she's
room
talking to the window right now.
Yeah, she's just out there.
She's gone.
I know, but she says there's a problem heading to Storybrooke that is going to need a savior to solve, but hey, no savior to solve it. So I'm wondering what that problem is, because it can't just be the Fury that showed up in this week's episode and, you know, just beat Robin Hood to heck and back.
Yeah.
It almost took him to heck and back, too, actually. But, you know, I was thinking some ideas. What could it be? Could it be Morgana?
You're just going to keep throwing that one around, aren't you? Well,
it's
I'm
relevant.
Just saying.
It's pretty relevant.
Third point with Morgana.
I have a lot of questions here.
Okay.
Could Merlin be the real bad guy? Could it be Merlin or some machination of Merlin coming to Storybrooke to wreak havoc?
But the apprentice,
yes. But I mean, you know, we've seen characters go a long, long way for a gag on this show before, you know.
It's very true.
Merlin could go that far.
Maybe. I don't know.
Let's see here. You know, and I also thought it was interesting that Emma says that everybody else failed her. And, you know, I think she seems very shaky on her Dark One footing and stuff. I think she's faking some aspect of this. Either she didn't cast the curse, or she's kind of trying to manipulate Regina into being the savior because she knows the town needs a savior and she's actually trying to do good.
Who did she want Regina to kill? That bothered me too. I'm really loud tonight.
It's cool.
Like, you know, when she's yelling at her going, you know, you want to be the savior, you know, do what you need to do and stuff like that. I'm like, that means she has to kill someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know she obviously sacrificed herself, but who was Emma thinking? We've already sacrificed multiple dwarves to random spells. Mm-hmm. Sorry, continue.
Oh, no, but I was thinking, you know, she wanted to give Henry a little hint that she was still cool with him and that things were still ultimately going to be cool. But then again, it's some stuff we see in the trailer for next week and kind of where they left it at the end, maybe not, too.
Not so cool.
And, you know, one thing that bothered me that I just wanted to point out that Snow's like, if we win, Emma loses.
What was that?
Yeah, because isn't their goal to rid Emma of the Dark One? So if they win, then Emma's fine and she's not the Dark One anymore. She doesn't lose because obviously she's not the Dark One anymore. I mean, if they lose, then Emma dies. And then everybody loses. You know,
I don't know.
Emma dies or they die or something.
Someone's
like
dying.
That.
And, well.
Oh, and Sage of Earth says maybe it's the Black Fairy or the original Dark One could be.
Another Emery says, Johanna did it.
Johanna did it. I support. Maybe Johanna was the original Dark One. Maybe Johanna's Morgana Le Fay. Just saying.
But Downton.
Okay, let's see here. Elsie says, I think Emma was telling Regina that Regina needs to sacrifice herself to save Robin, which is what a savior would do.
Yeah, well, she did, but
She made the effort. Obviously, her friend, she got a little help from her friends, so she didn't
included Arthur, which is why it was weird.
Was Arthur in that group?
Yes.
I thought it was just I thought it was Snow, Charming, and Grumpy.
Nope.
Oh, interesting.
Snow, Charming, Grumpy, and Arthur.
Okay, so other Anne-Marie says, I'm sticking to my theory of Emma getting pregnant and giving birth to the Dark One. Ew. Okay. Okay, huh. Gonna get that mental image out of my head here. Okay, Anne-Marie, out of 340 shipping combinations of Hook, Grumpy, Belle, and Granny, how many shipping combinations do you give this episode?
Oh. 284.
Why?
Meh.
Meh?
Meh. I really like, I mean, obviously I've been yelling the whole time, so that's never a good sign. Mm-hmm. I have other things even in my head, like, I can't come up with them now, but I was like, why? I'm just like, meh.
Mm-hmm.
I when you got so excited over it, I was like, are we watching the same show?
We were. At different times.
We were at different times. And yeah.
That's nope. Fair. See, as for me, I think I'm going to have to give it, you know what? I'll give it 315 shipping combinations of Hook, Grumpy, Belle, and Granny.
That's one of our biggest differences in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was really strong. I thought it put a lot of questions into my head, which are always the episodes I love the best because mm-hmm. they get me thinking, they get me theorizing, they get me talking about Johanna being Morgana Le Fay. And I really just liked it overall. I thought it was really strong, way stronger than, say, episode two of last season, for sure. And I really think that Hook, Grumpy, Belle, and Granny should enter into a polygamous relationship. That's all I'm saying. So it would be Frumelanny.
Stop it. Stop okay. trying to do that.
Okay. What do they got over in the chat room?
Let's see. Over here, we've got Bobby gives it 270. Other Anne-Marie, 325. Amy P, 300. Sage of Earth, 340 out of 340.
Nice.
Hope, 307. Angel, 290. Oh, May, 300.
I will say that Sage of Earth had such a high score for it because she thinks that they're teasing Hades, that Hades from Hercules is coming to Once Upon a Time, which I could see. I could definitely see.
Okay.
Because of the whole, you know, underworld thing.
I got you.
And May says about 300 out of 340 yes. shipping combinations.
I said that.
Okay, so let's see here. I guess now, what time is it? It's time to go on to the news.
News.
First up, the ratings. Once Upon a Time was a 1.8, however, and Quantico, which I guess was accurate.
I copied the sentence.
Yeah, it was a 1.9. However, both retained all of their 18 to 49 numbers from the premiere week. So they didn't go down at all.
They didn't go down. They didn't go up. I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see them go up. So that's
yeah.
all I got.
I think that's okay though. Like
it's better to stay steady than to go down.
Because last year at this time, we were getting like 2.2, 2.4.
Were we?
Yeah,
that's because it was Frozen, and you had all the kids begging their moms to let them stay up to watch Elsa.
But then again, these aren't adjusted for DVR and all that
right.
stuff.
Right, we don't usually get those till like Wednesday or Thursday.
Okay, so now I guess we'll go ahead and take a look at the trailer for next week, which is called Siege Perilous, which is a kind of fun title here. Let's see here. First of all, Evil Emma again.
To pull Excalibur from the stone.
Dark
One, tell me what it is.
All I need is your trust.
Looks like a very Captain Swan heavy episode, which I'm excited about. And then Emma's trying to hit the Excalibur with the shovel for some reason.
Because that's helpful.
Why doesn't she just hit King Arthur with the shovel?
Because she doesn't know he's evil yet.
But he could still pull the sword from the stone.
Next Sunday at 8/7 Central on.
But it looks like an interesting episode.
It'll be interesting. Yeah, it'll definitely. Be interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we actually have news this week.
Oh yeah, we do, don't we? Go ahead and tell the people the news.
Hey, guess what? Emily DeRaven's pregnant.
Somebody's preggers. We've had pregnancy announcements on both of our fan casts over the past couple weeks.
No, the past week.
Past week.
Past
yeah.
week. So Emily DeRaven is expecting her first child with her boyfriend Eric.
Oh, Hope points out that Emma's wearing the date dress in the promo from when her and Hook went on the date and he had the hand back and stuff. So that's interesting.
Interesting.
She's trying to win him back.
She's trying to do because he
soundly rejected her this week.
Well, and his hair's not her hair's not the white. It's just her regular blonde.
Yeah.
So, yes. So she is having a baby.
You know what? Maybe she's trying to get him to be the hero to pull the sword from the stone.
I bet she is playing that.
Yep. Emma's running games. And congratulations, Emily.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I'm just trying to talk about babies over here, but that's fine.
Babies! Yeah, so I wonder if they'll roll that into a Rumpel and Belle are having a baby kind of thing.
I think it depends. It didn't say.
Or maybe she'll have a baby bumpy from Grumpy.
A baby bumpy from Grumpy. A baby book?
No, probably not. Okay, so next week after you're done watching Siege Perilous, take a pregnancy test. Make sure you're not with child from Grumpy's Baby.
Oh my God.
Or Grumpy, make sure you don't have Grumpy's Baby. Then email us greetingsfromstorybrooke@gmail.com. Tweet us at GFStorybrooke. Facebook is facebook.com/greetingsfromstorybrooke. And the voicemail number is 424-274-2352. Again, that's 424-274-2352. And let me find the things here. Hold on one second. I think I have
them right holding. Here. We're holding.
Are we holding? Are we still holding?
We are still holding.
Okay, here's the first voicemail.
Sing me a story.
Sing me
a rhyme.
Bumpy, 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 bumpy. Once upon a time. No, for real. Here's Bobby. Take it away, Bobby.
Hey, Bill and Amory. It's Bobby. After last week, I was really looking forward to this episode because it felt like we were jumping like headfirst into this season. And unfortunately, this season or this episode just felt like kind of a standstill. We really didn't learn too much about like what Emma's motives are or what happened in Camelot.
She's running games.
All we really learned is that if you leave Storybrooke, you turn into a tree. other than that, actually, we did learn, like, I felt like this episode was about, like, accepting who you are. Regina, you know, feeling like she isn't worthy of being a savior and having to fake it when she doesn't have to fake it. She, you know, don't do it or don't. Don't dream it, be it.
Don't fake it till you make it. You made it, baby.
And then Emma, you know, unfortunately, she's the dark one and she has to accept being the dark one. I mean, there has to be a dark one. If there's dark, wherever there's light, there has to be dark. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, she's the bearer of the dark at this point. Although I do agree with Bill that there's some sort of thing going on there with Emma, where maybe she's like got some sort of ulterior motive as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it. So did Rumpel when he was the dark one. Yes. Just like the dark one is telling Emma now to try. It looks like he's trying to tell her to kill all the people that she loves. It looks like that's the price that if she truly wants to become the dark one, she has to snuff out all the light in her life. And that's kind of messed up. But there it is.
Being a dark
thing
one
at the end
easy.
With the whole Guardians of the Galaxy ripoff, the whole Care Bear stare thing, that was just kind of cheesy and stupid. And like I said, I mean, although I liked seeing Regina and Emma have to explore the different side to their personalities and have to accept for who they are, I even liked some of the things Emma was saying. It's like, when she told Hook, this is who I am, why can't you accept me for it?
Wrong with me.
And I know you guys thought Arthur was kind of creepy. I'm thinking maybe Guinevere is kind of creepy, but maybe that's just me.
High five.
Kind of a short email voicemail this week, because like I said, I just kind of felt like this episode kind of went nowhere, for me anyway. So I'm going to give it 594 of 672 leaves from a dopey tree.
Thank you very much, Bobby. Okay, next up we have one from Anthony. Take it away, Anthony.
Hi, Bill and Emery. This is Anthony calling.
Howdy.
So my first reactions for this episode was great. I mean, like, I like the way how they are portraying Camelot in a different way. Everything just seems like very, you know, very up to standard. I really feel like this season is going to be better than the rest. I love the point of view on how they actually state on how magic really does come with a price. You know, like they're making that statement, that discussion, that point, you know, very very, you know, down to a T, so that we can so that we can actually understand. So I actually like this episode really much. I like for the fact that people are now starting to trust Regina in a different way. Mm-hmm. I like how she's becoming into filling the role of a savior. I liked for the fact that now the Seven Daughters are getting much more of a part. I also love the relationship that Henry is getting with the little princess there. This whole episode was great. If I had to rate it, I would give it probably 9.75 Dark One's daggers. So looking forward to actually hearing from you guys, you and Marie, and hope to hear you guys' discussion and everything. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Always great to hear from you. And Anthony always messages me because we had him on as a guest during the Wonderland days. Mm-hmm. And so
they're discussing in the chat.
Yeah, so he has my Skype. So he always messages me on Skype. And I guess he's doing a couple fan cast of his own now, one for Scandal and one for another show too.
I hear good things about that.
Definitely.
Which means I'll have to sit in Netflix, binge watch it when it gets canceled.
Okay, but you want to go ahead and read this one from Alina?
All right, it's from Alina. Really enjoyed it, smiley face. The ending Dark One monologue was haunting but powerful. The pull of the family was so desperate, we so desperately to protect. The friendships that make it possible to forget who we used to be. The magic that threatened to undo the most evil things. The love that refuses to give up on us. We can't escape the reach of the light. Ooh, interesting. Leaving Storybrooke across the town line makes you trapped like a tree, like Merlin. LOL, loved Regina's sass. You're lucky you're not locked in Granny's freezer. how the hell are you going to give a tree a taco? Yes, that was good. However, I'd like a taco. Emma's place, nice place, but it was empty. You can absolutely tell that Jennifer is having a lot of fun with the new role, very much so. Love that Snow and Charming taught Regina how to dance. And then questioned her evil queen dress choice. That's right. Because it was one of these types of dresses. Can you see that?
Hold on. Let me, there we go.
It's one of these types of very revealing, pointy black and red.
Can we get a little less evil?
Boxio.
A little less evil.
Universe Boxio. And then it was like baby pink and rhinestones. Perfect. Loved that Snow got to experience a ball with Emma and they both look stunning. Charming giving Henry girl advice. You're from another land. You're mysterious. Violet and Henry bonding over music on his iPod. The entire scene was lovely, very Disney movie-esque. Yes, it was, with the spinny skirt. The Dark Swan and Regina scene was excellent. Really great acting. Loved how everyone banded together with Regina to stop the Fury. I just hope it's a group effort in saving the town and Emma, not just one person. The promo for next week looks heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Alina.
It'll be interesting. Thank you, Alina, very much. Okay, next up we have a voicemail from our old friend, Don O'War. Take it away. Not saying age, just saying that, you know, we've been friends with Don for a long time. Take it away, Don.
Hi, Bill and Emery. This is Don O'War. Happy new season of Once Upon a Time. It's exciting, isn't it? I think it is.
Yes.
I just wanted to let you know I'm still there and I'm watching. I'm not good at getting my feedback in a punctual manner, but I think
Well, that's your deal, right?
I was about to say, this is about the premiere, right?
Yeah, probably.
Called early enough. So my thoughts on the price. I'm just kind of sucked into the story and I'm not picking apart, inconsistencies and things like that. Like that I was really distracted with the Spice Girls of Evil because everything they did didn't make enough sense to me. And I'm like, why, everything, like, why is she wearing her hair like that? And like, and then I was making up like fanciful, theories for things that never panned out because I think I just wasn't like absorbed into the story like I am right now. I really liked that device. When they walked into Camelot and we thought it was over and then all of a sudden they were back in Storybrooke and I forgot their memories and you're like, oh no, again. But then I'm like, that's what they do on the show. That's how they do it on the show. So I'm like, I'm gonna ride the ride and I'm riding it. And all the questions are things that I expect will be resolved later, and I'm just watching as it goes. I don't think Emma's fully dark. That's the only theory I got so far. I think that she's not really turned because her skin was going gold when she used dark magic, right?
She saw the dark dermatologist and got it fixed.
So she's not fully turned yet, or she'd be gold. That's my theory, but that's not really that big or earth-shattering theory. What else do I have? Oh, yeah, doesn't she look Hitchcock, like a cool blonde, right? Look it up. Google Hitchcock cool blonde, and you'll know what I'm talking about if you haven't already approached that. That's it. That's all I got. Thanks for your podcast. I love it. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much, Dawn. I'm going to do that right now, Google Hitchcock.
Shall I move on?
Nope, not yet.
Okay.
Cool blonde, because we have to figure out what she means by this.
I know nothing.
Hitchcock. Okay, yeah, just because, yeah, he was very fond of casting blondes that were beautiful, but not exactly bombshells. Like, he wasn't casting Marilyn Monroe. He was casting, you know, just very well put together blondes in his movies. Here's a couple examples here I'll show on the screen real quick, like Carlotta Valdez and what's her name? Jamie Lee Curtis's mom in Psycho and all of that. You want to go ahead and read the next one here?
Okay, sure. This one's from Ash, Hay, and Bill. While everyone looked gorgeous and dashingly full of swagger in Camelot, and Emma and Belle were dropping truth bombs all over the place. Yay, action daddy charming. Woohoo! So really, they all should have known how secrets cause problems by now, but I understand why they did it. I loved how Graham's charming gave Henry some advice, though technically he did have a crush on Grace first, but so cute. And looks like we had Charon, I don't know, this time around, so maybe some more of the Greek group will show up as well, mm-hmm. or a mix of Celtic too.
Yeah, we're getting some votes for the Greek mythology in the chat room.
There's always been votes for Greek mythology in the chat room. I loved how Belle and Grumpy had another buddy moment in the montage.
Bumpy.
Oh my gosh. Act my heart and holy smokes, epic questing time. Woohoo! I'm going to give this one 9 princesses and the poppers switcheroos. Cheers and hugs, Ash.
Thank you, Ash. Have a very bumpy day, Ash, for sure.
Bumpy.
Okay, next up we have a voicemail from our another old friend. Amy P, take it away, Amy.
Hey, Bill and Marie, this Hello. Is Amy P, and I thought I would call in and give my thoughts on tonight's episode.
Excellent.
I really liked tonight's episode. I'm not normally a Regina fan, or at least I wasn't in the beginning, but I like how they're kind of turning her into a hero, and I like how this episode was for her character. My favorite part kind of had to be when Charming was teaching Regina how to dance. I just thought it was a cute kind of moment. Mm-hmm. As for the whole Fury
Unexpected.
Kind of theme they had, I was a little bit scared that because they were showing Roland, I thought he was going to maybe die or he was going to be the one taken. I was kind of glad he wasn't. But also kind of glad no one really died in this episode. But anyway, one thing I didn't really understand about this episode, though, was why Belle brought the rose to the dance or the ball.
Mm-hmm. She wanted to dance with her rose. That's all.
It just seems kind of weird that she would be carrying around that big bell jar. Anyway, hope you guys have a good show. I will talk to you later. Bye.
Yeah, and Amy, your voicemail did sound weird. I wasn't sure why. Sadly, I didn't have time to try and fix it. It sounded like it was almost playing double or something.
Yeah.
But thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Wait a second. We have another last-minute voicemail here from our old friend, Dawn O'War. Dawn!
Dawn, we already talked to you.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Dawn? Called.
Hi, it's Dawn O'War again. I remembered when I put the phone down that there was one thing that was like inconsistent that took me out of the story. And that was, do you really think that Henry likes that song? Like, do you really think that's what he listens to? Like, do you really think that Henry is listening to like gay dance club hits from the 80s? It doesn't make sense. I know Storybrooke was frozen in time, so maybe. Like, it just doesn't seem like that's where he would be listening. I don't know.
I would have liked them to have been playing If I Could Turn Back Time, which I believe actually is a gay dance club or nightclub song from the 80s.
Yeah. So what he would listen to, I'd have to think about that, like, in some detail, like, what music would Henry listen to? But that's not it. I don't know how you feel about it, but that's not it. And certainly, do you think that's what he picked to woo teenage girls? Like, would he go with, like,
what's now like One Direction or something. I don't think that Henry listens to One Direction either. I have to think about it. I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you very much again, Dawn.
Thank you.
And let's see here. Well, actually, you know what? We'll play this one from Michael Lucero, and then we'll wrap it up with a late letter from Tracy. Take it away, Michael.
Hey, Bill and Anne-Marie. It's Michael. I really liked this episode. Not as good as the first one, but still very strong. I really liked Henry's initially awkward approach of Violet. It seems like he's grown a lot since then, since Camelot, since he made the approach on his own without any encouragement the second time. It kind of feels like a callback to season one. Even though their memories are lost, these characters' past still manages to carry over and filter through in interesting ways. I also love the song that they used both times. It's called Only You, and it's by an 80s British synth-pop band called Yazoo. And not only is it a great song, it's also a Fringe reference. For once, I'm talking about Fringe instead of Lost.
But now I actually
know the song through that show. They used it at the end of the first episode of their final season in a really moving, almost tear-inducing moment about how music can give us hope in bleak situations. So I think that's really interesting because they have been playing with hope a lot in this episode as well. I'm pretty curious about Emma wanting to reunite the dagger with Excalibur. It seems like she has the same goal as Arthur did, though for her own evil intentions. And I remember Merlin at the beginning of last episode telling her not to take Excalibur from the stone. And in that scene, he said that the wrong action for the right reasons is still the wrong action, or something along those lines. In this case, assuming that Arthur really is a good person and doesn't have his own sinister motivations, which that scene with Guinevere kind of hinted that maybe he might, but assuming that he doesn't, it seems like Emma's actually doing the precise inverse of what Merlin warning, the right action for the wrong reasons. So I wonder how that's going to play out. What happens if they are reunited? I don't know, but I bet I'm going to really enjoy finding out. So, all in all, I'd give this episode 4.1 out of 5 pieces of voyeuristic jewelry. All right. Can't wait to hear the episode, and y'all take care. Bye.
I also really appreciated how the jewelry was able to change cameras, you know, mid-scene. That was nice, too. Yeah, and we did – unfortunately, we got a ton of voicemails.
We got a ridiculous amount of voicemails. I think you all decide like, we're tired of hearing us say your words and just called them in. Which is fine.
Yeah, definitely. We love voicemails.
But we're going to try and keep it short
for the
voicemails.
We try and keep the episode to around an hour and 10 minutes or something.
Which is where we're at right now.
And you know, we always, even if we don't get to your voicemail, we always try and bring in what you have to say in chat, too.
Yes, so if you're in the chat, we can, you know, reference what you're saying.
Yeah, but seriously, I don't think we even used a fifth of the voicemails we got. And we've already been about 12 minutes in voicemail. So no offense to anyone who we ended up having to cut. We tried to get some people who weren't in last week anyway to get in there. I know we always try and play them, but we didn't get to as many as we would like to.
Yep.
Oh, wait, there's one more that we haven't played yet.
Stop doing that to her.
Sing me a story.
Sing me.
Rhyme.
Sing all about what happened once upon a time.
Okay, last one here from Tracy Miller, who sent this in last week.
Last week, while we were recording. Yeah.
Tracy says, oh my God, this was so worth the wait. I loved this episode and can't wait to hear your opinion. Okay, so yeah, we lost our memories again, but I'm so psyched to see what happened. The one-liners were great, and it just felt like we were headed in a great direction. Yay, and welcome back, everyone. So thank you, Tracy.
Thank you, Tracy.
And, you know, next week when you're done watching the episode, you know, after you get done with your pregnancy test, make sure you're not bumpy.
Email us. Oh, that's so wrong.
Email greetings from storybrooke@gmail.com. Twitter @GFStorybrooke. The Facebook is facebook.com/greetingsfromstorybrooke. And the voicemail number is 424-274-2352. Again, that's 424-274-2352.
See, and now that you know we're going to have to start limiting just for time, it's a competition.
Yes, it is.
Short voicemails are awesome.
Yeah.
Short and sweet, and we can play more people, but it's just when they start doing this that it's really hard to play more than a couple.
Yeah, because generally we have like 10 or 15 minutes for feedback in the episode. So, if you can get like a minute, minute and a half, like way more likely to get into. Definitely.
Exactly.
Okay, so Anne-Marie, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at AMDSimone.
And as for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Bill Meeks. You can follow all of the podcasts we do, including Legends of Gotham, Gotham.
Coming
and
tomorrow.
Universe Box, the podcast about everything, stories set to a theme, at universebox.com. You know what? You can find me at the 7-Eleven down the street. In about 20 minutes, I'm going to get a chili dog.
Chili dogs?
Chili dogs. Do you like chili dogs?
I love chili dogs.
Excellent. Well, I think it's time to go.
All right.
So let's go ahead and go. And until next time.
Greetings from Storybrooke.
No, it's just if I have it up in the player.
It's just me enjoy it. Sorry.
Yeah, if I have it up in the player, I have to play it.